A patchwork Robotech movie dies in the theater. Tekken 2 comes to PlayStation. And America runs on Brondo. This week on 30-2010. 30-2010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends. Those were different days. And there's so much to say. It's time for another episode of 30-2010, your weekly look back at what happened this very week, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I'm Chris Antiston.
I'm Dave Rudden.
I'm Diana Goodman.
We are looking at the week of August 26th through September 1st, precisely what happens in this week in 1986, mm-hmm. 1996, and 2006.
Mm-hmm. What could it be?
All of those, you had to be alive for one of them. Exactly. If you're listening to the show, you must have.
Unless you're like a baby and you're...
Unless you're a baby being soothed to sleep by yelling about movie clips.
Or you're a nine-year-old, but you're watching PewDiePie right now.
Yeah, you're really going to want to pause that Minecraft video and let us tell you about Othello.
Yeah, you're going to want to... Remember Shakespeare, kids? News this week, we'll start in 1986. We usually bounce off some news first. Mm-hmm. They're always disasters.
This is the kind of news
that traveled across the world.
Those are the notable things, because otherwise, anything they announce in the news always changes.
We practically kicked the year off with the Challenger exploding.
Yes.
August 31st, 86, Aeromexico Flight 498 is clipped by a Piper and crashes into Cerritos neighborhood, killing 67 aboard, 3 in the Piper, it's another plane, and 15 on the ground. It leads to the FAA requiring new collision warning systems.
Okay, wait. So the Piper is another plane.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a little bird that got the engine.
It's not Roddy Piper. First wrestling.
Yay!
I thought you were talking about the lead of Orange is the New Black. Yeah. The most boring protagonist in the history of television.
Yeah. No, it's a little plane. It took off while this big plane was coming, heading towards LAX, and crashed into a neighborhood. Because they're like, maybe we should have collision warnings and
How does that even happen in 1986?
I don't know. Air traffic control was like thinking about the big planes and ignoring, just some guy in his plane. Mm-hmm. Like, woo, let's do this thing. And oh, crap.
So the collision warnings are just an automatic radar, the same way rednecks find fish in their boat. Beep, 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 beep.
That makes sense.
No, anybody can use those, Chris. Yeah. Just rednecks.
It's not for what?
It's not tied to their blood. Movies this week. We start off with Shanghai Surprise.
I know Diana is going to take the lead on this one.
One of my favorite sex positions.
The surprise is always the same, though. A little clip here.
Next time I see you, I set you up in a nice tie.
You have no Mr. Webb.
Sean Penn.
See, you have quite a following, Mr. Wazy.
Madonna.
You deceitful, jelly spine, backstabbing veteran.
Shanghai Surprise.
Right. What a weird delivery.
Notorious Bomb.
Oh, it's a bomb. For good reason. It's terrible.
One of many times Madonna makes a movie with the person she's with.
Yeah, but I was just...
And it doesn't work out.
I was just listening to the You Must Remember This about Madonna in this period, but she is sort of responsible for bringing in vogue old Hollywood and was trying to make movies. So I knew you'd be interested in this.
But yes, the idea is, okay, it's going to be a screwball caper type...
Period piece.
And it's... One thing that's really weird is that, Madonna and Sean Penn were together at this time. They have such bad screen chemistry.
Yeah.
And it's weird because Madonna's had such a strange film career in that she's terrible, always. Mm-hmm. Except when, in Evita, she doesn't have any dialogue. And for some strange reason, League of Their Own.
Oh.
She's great.
Oh, because she's playing her basically old Brooklyn self.
Yeah.
You don't like her as Breathless Mahoney and Dick Tracy?
She's almost like the Harley Quinn with her voice.
What about the girl? And who's that girl?
That girl? I saw that twice at my grandparents' house without cable, so I have no idea.
Oh, it's bad.
Also, is this the best way to use Madonna in a movie? The biggest pop star of the 80s. Playing someone from the 1950s,
but
you want to see her as
the
a 30s, punk girl.
I don't think she's. I don't think she sings.
Yeah,
she doesn't sing. Who does sing? George Harrison, who produced this movie.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, now, George Harrison again. Besides being secretly the best Beatle, was a huge film fan.
Yeah.
And produced a bunch of films.
My favorite, Life of Brian.
Life of Brian, mm-hmm. and I think he did Unholy Grail too, but Life of Brian would not have happened without George Harrison.
Yeah. I think he mortgaged something to make it happen.
He just wanted to see a Monty Python movie, and no one was giving him money. He's like, well, I'll just give you money.
He's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy.
It's been done.
It's been done.
Yeah, and so he produced this, mm-hmm. I guess, thinking, yeah, it's a 30s caper. It'll mm-hmm. be fun. It's so bad.
Is it?
It's really, really bad.
I think it's one of those movies that's like not on DVD and like really difficult to find.
It's bad.
But it's really difficult to describe, and I know I say this a lot, how big a star Madonna was. So whether she shepherded this movie into existence or it occurred naturally, everybody wanted Madonna in their movie because there are few celebrities as popular as Madonna.
Like even nowadays, like Beyonce couldn't just be like, I want to be in a movie, put me in a movie.
Yep.
Make it happen. Like, no.
Mariah, mm-hmm. like, who thought a Mariah Carey movie would fail? And basically make us all forget about 9/11.
Well, they had numerous Madonna examples to the point where it's like, it won't work. But also...
Never mind.
Yeah. We'll blow through this really quick.
Robotech is now a movie in an all-new story never before seen on TV.
That's all you need.
So
what
Robotech...
that Superman music?
Yeah. Well, that's the patchwork... And I this is in conjunction with the other movie we have a clip for. Just play that real fast, because it's long and hilarious, and I'm going to bore the shit out of everybody.
Othello. A brilliant film. Tremendously compelling. A great adventure. Gene Shalit, NBC TV. Spectacular star performances. Heart-wrenching drama and glorious voices. Judith Crist. Extravagant grand opera made easy. An accessible, overwhelmingly handsome movie version of a classic. A potent shot of cultural adrenaline.
I didn't realize how good Robotech
was. Bruce Williamson, Playboy. Even if you're not an opera fan...
Oh my God!
Let it play!
You may be thrilled by the passion and beauty of this film. And if you are an opera fan, the film is a must. Bravo. Stuart Klein, WNEW-TV. Canon Films proudly presents Othello.
There. So I wanted to mention, because we talked about Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 last week. That was released by Canon Films. Robotech is released by Canon Films this week, as well as Othello. If you haven't seen that documentary Electric Boogaloo on Canon Films, the Golan Globus team of just, let's just make everything happen. So who directed it? Zeffirelli?
Yeah, Franco Zeffirelli.
It's Franco Zeffirelli. This is their huge prestige picture. In conjunction with, they buy the rights to Robotech the movie, but there's already a Robotech movie in Japan, and they're like, don't use any of our characters. So they combine two different, an OVA and a television show.
Megazone 23 and the Southern Cross, which are like unrelated things.
Totally unrelated.
OVAs are like the longer...
Yeah, like episodes. Original video animations, but maybe they don't get filmed. They're screened theatrically. Like, yeah, but a full-screen Robotech movie for America with none of the characters anybody recognizes. This is in 1 week. This is what... In 2 weeks... Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. This is one company releasing all three of these films in a 7-day period.
Also, I don't believe it. Like, the very beginning of that, there's a Gene Shalit quote and there's no puns or wordplay.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that.
Othello, go Othello. Go fellow to Othello. You'll love it.
I could just imagine the desk of the guy who's sorting all the papers. Okay, so here's where we pay for the chainsaws. Here's we pay the editor to cobble this shit together, and here's the check to Luciano Pavarotti.
But that's why the team of Golden Globes is so fascinating. They didn't care about even quality, just sort of like, movies make money, so we make movies. That's what we do. Any kind of movie you want. We'll make this horror movie, we'll make this Japanese animated movie, and we'll make this giant prestige Oscar Beatty picture as well within a 7-day period.
That's so
cannot
weird.
Get over it. And the Robotech movie is just, it is called Robotech the movie. It's gone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist because nobody, you have to license the Robotech name, the Southern Cross rights, and the Megazone 23 rights. So on one DVD in 2001, a Robotech DVD, as a special feature, they have Robotech the movie. Wow. Featuring, it is cut down to 30 minutes of footage they have accessibility to. This has never been seen outside of a very, very short run. And I believe it's only notable because like Transformers the movie had come out.
Yeah.
So either was direct competition or had sullied anybody's interest in seeing... a Japanese animated film by killing all of their favorite characters.
So I hate to ask, but what is Robotech?
Robotech? Ah, shit, Elson, you got a description of Robotech?
This is like a Japanese
animated
show.
It's an
anime
with like robot suits. Like
Macross?
I didn't watch it a lot. And then, yeah, Macross, I think it was in Japan. And I came over here into Robotech. And there were toys and there were...
I think
I had a toy, but this this predates me a little because it's 86.
We would have been real young.
I'm only five, but I remember seeing a commercial for a Robotech thing, and it stuck in my head because the idea humanoid robot suits flying around shooting each other. I'm like, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard of, and I'm five, so I've only heard of 12 things, so it must be the coolest.
Yeah.
And then I didn't hear about Robotech until the 90s, and I was like, wait, what's Macross? And I've been perpetually confused.
It's very confusing.
And also you get Takara in there with like some of the toys, like Jetfire, Starfire.
I think for Transformers,
it's like... Blah, blah, blah,
it's
blah.
One of the first, or at least major noteworthy, Japanese animated export to America, but just totally butchered and produced out of sequence for America. So like it just took, like I think in like the 2000s, my friends got excited because they were producing... the DVDs back in the order they were supposed to be with the right localization.
The Southern Cross is
it's
like
a television show.
It's a different show.
It's a different television show. It has none of the same characters. No one, none of the same people worked on it.
What? So they just took two, instead of cobbling together a movie out of episodes of a TV show.
They Ed Wooded it.
They cobbled together a movie out of different TV shows?
Yes, different TV shows.
Wow.
Two different TV shows.
A robot's a robot.
And then commissioned a new ending, so there is exclusive footage in the film. But, like, it's just fucking insane.
What old
like,
Hollywood actor does voice in this?
I don't know.
But it's, like, just to, like, further confuse, like, the toys, like, there's a prominent... Transformer toy called Jetfire, and he ends up in, like, a couple of the... There was, like, a storybook animated book that I had on VHS that he was in. Jetfire, I think, is in the second Transformers Michael Bay movie as an SR-71. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I think that's what he is in there. But, like, the toy of this character is from Macross because I think Takara or whoever had the same toy lines, and they're like, yeah, now it's a Transformer, which made it like, well, wait, is this the same toy and one's blue and one's red? So as a kid, I find that confusing, and then there's a show that's based on another thing and a movie that's pieces of other... So, like... Yeah. I just, at a young age, was like, I'm wiping Macross and Robotech off my list.
I think I might have done that, too.
I can't deal with this.
Because visually, I was on board from the second I saw footage of it.
Yeah.
A cool name with a cool logo and cool robots fighting.
And I'm like, sure it's not as complicated as I'm building up in my head. It's just like, I kind of was just like, the breaker went off and the fuse was never repaired.
But but in Japan, it should go without saying, it is massive. It is a long-living dynasty of a franchise. It's still going, in some respect. I think there was a movie just last year in Japan.
Wow. Look, we have all this talk about the Robotech toys, but what about the board game tied to Othello?
And the so NES game Othello.
Really polarized the black and whites.
Yeah.
But TV this week, David?
So August 26, 1986, Ted Knight dies. He's best known for Mary Tyler Moore. But at this
UHF? No, that's not him.
No,
it's Caddyshack, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, around this time he was still on TV. He was on a show called Too Close for Comfort. I think before that it was
Joe Comfort.
But no, before that it was just the Ted Knight Show. But like they renamed in the final seasons. But so despite him dying in August, they still had episodes with him on it from September 1986 all the way up to January 1987. Which it's almost like that John Ritter situation, except like. You actually see a lot of episodes of this guy.
No, that's even more episodes available.
Yeah.
I don't think John Ritter had that many
to
burn.
And August 30th, the first U.S. episode of Spitting Image airs.
Oh, my God.
It's not that name's not well known in America, but it was a U.K. show that aired for 5 years. We will get to know it later this year.
Are we talking about this another time?
We'll be talking about it later, I think, this year with Land of Illusion, which I think is
the
Phil Collins
song.
Single.
Genesis or Phil Collins?
It's Genesis,
The Land of Confusion video has all these Ronald Reagan puppets. We were talking about this somewhere because of all like the vague 80s memories I have, this one's the vaguest and took me the longest time to figure out what it was. Because the Ronald Reagan puppet was like pitching beer and soda. Mm. Like they were all over commercials in the Phil Collins video, but we never got the Spitting Image show, which I think went for like 30 fucking years.
Yeah, but I mean, they only aired like five of these specials in America. Yeah. And yeah, this one was called Down and Out in the White House, and they were all Ronald Reagan related. Like they knew their target in America.
Remember the influence of Down and Out in Beverly Hills, that big
Yeah, wow.
Titling convention kept stuck around.
So what is the show, though? Spitting Image?
It's just like a, it's kind of like a sketch show, but with puppets. Yeah. And I guess they're all, like, political.
Right.
And, the, you know, it's like they Muppets spend a lot on that Ronald Reagan puppet.
If Kermit was a real, like, political figure.
But not?
Not yet.
He doesn't have office?
I yeah. Man, announce my candidacy.
As, like, a five-year-old,
vote yes.
six-year-old.
For the Libertarian Party, yeah!
Those puppets scared the hell out of me when I was,
they're
like, five, six. And,
frightening.
And the song is scary, too. It's like,
the Land of Confusion?
The music video, we'll get to it, but, like, it ends with the fucking nuclear bomb going off. I'm like, yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah. Boy, I'm sure they socked it to Margaret Thatcher, though, yeah. on that show, right? Yeah. Ah, she's funny, because... She's a lady who had dementia eventually. Anyway. Oh.
Games this week, nothing. Because it's 1986, still not a lot going on for games. I'm not sure. I haven't looked ahead. But the NES has been out. We've gone over this a lot because it's what a summer it's been for nothing. In unless it's movies. But yeah, games. Metroid did just turn 30, but that was in Japan and the Famicom Disk System. We will soon hopefully get into more NES games, but other than that, in the U.S., not a lot's going on. Yeah. Some PC stuff is happening, but...
who cares?
If there's notable... if you're listening and there's notable, like, Amiga or C64 or...
Put in the comments.
Or ZX Spectrum or your Sinclair, like, just things that are not big here, not really noted as like, notable releases in the wikis and stuff and dates. Like, just pop up in the comments on lasertimepodcast.com on the 302010 logo.
Now you're just talking about this on Retronauts that, like, nobody was chronicling the right dates for any
none
of this stuff.
None of this stuff, yeah.
Everything, things got delayed, and, like, we were just talking about the... First reading about the Ninja Turtles game, and, like...
Yeah.
The Ninja Turtles game, and it also was coinciding with a new TV series, like... We're hearing about the game before the show exists in Nintendo Power because that's when it's entering development. It gets delayed as fuck. And we're just confused as kids. Where's this goddamn game? And I don't know. This magazine was written 4 months ago.
Yeah, and then the games just show up. And it's like a rumor. Like, the Ninja Turtles game is out. I don't believe you.
Yes.
Like, there's no way to corroborate this. There's no commercial. I went to Walmart. It wasn't there. Mm-hmm. What else can I do? Mm-hmm. I'm in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. I have no other recourse. So not a lot's going on with games. Music taking us out of the 80s. Status Quo in the Army Now.
What?
Is an album.
Heard of Status Quo.
In the Army Now is a great Ren and Stimpy episode.
Yeah. Toto's album Fahrenheit.
Hey.
But unfortunately, this is post Africa.
Oh, then who cares?
Yeah. But taking us out, Steve Winwood.
Ah!
Hey.
Higher Love is number one.
All right.
Number one song.
Again, I said it about Paul Simon, but just the poster child of 80s. This music to me, this and Valerie.
Yeah. All those songs are great, and this song I'll always remember, one, for being one of the few normal Toys R Us songs I would hear when I worked there for 5 years. And it was, thank God there's a human singing, not about the seasons.
Bathtubs.
Or bathtubs. But I remember one time one of my friends called. We were like, oh, we all got to get up and go somewhere early. We're going to make sure everybody's up because we're going to drive to this. I don't remember what we were doing, but... called, and he had a phone in his room, and he's puts the phone up to say hello, blast this song through the phone at maximum volume to the point of just total audio distortion, and that is just what has reminded me, like, forever. It's just this song coming out of a tiny speaker.
And I always thought as a kid it was Break Me a Pile of Love.
I thought it was like We Break for Higher Love.
Yeah.
Like a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Well,
ass, grass, or love, no one rides for free.
I have a story about Status Quo.
What's Status Quo?
The British band. So, I guess it would be around this time, August of 2010, I'm at Gamescom with a buddy from GamePro, Andy Burt, and we hear this song, and we thought it was like just like the most German band trying to sing in English. Turns out it's these British guys singing the song called Rockin' All Over the World, and some of the lyrics are so dumb that I'm like, yeah, no wonder I thought this was a foreign person trying to sing. Oh, here we are, here we go. And I like it. Here we go, rocking all over the world.
Wow.
And I'm like, this is the dumbest song I've ever heard, but like for the next week, anytime we were hanging out, we were just singing that song.
Wow.
It's so dumb.
That sounds like a Banana Splits original.
I have to hear this.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just so confused. All right. Status Quo.
Totally right.
I mean, it's whatever.
We were like probably drunk too while, you know, German.
Is it just
beer.
That they're modulated or they're drunk and they have weird regional accents?
Yeah,
I don't know, but they do sound like they're slurring.
Yeah. Like, well, this is a British band. They invented English. They're not that good at it.
Well, the beautiful voice of Steve Winwood will take us out of 86.
Steve Winwood's got an interesting career, honestly.
No, really.
He was like a child prodigy. He was in Traffic when he was like 18, 19,
really?
Something like that. You know, Gimme Some Lovin', fucking amazing song.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Steve Winwood.
Really?
Back in the day. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, we'll take us out when we come back this same week in 1996.
Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Before you came on, you asked for me to bring a GameCube controller, which...
I got a Wii system for you.
Uh-huh.
What?
I think I accidentally dropped it, so it got cracked a bit.
Don't worry, it's still worthless.
It's okay. Maybe you guys can hang
did
on
something, did something Wii? Get in the cracks of the Wii?
Something might have filled up inside of it.
If this was a coffee, would it be a homebrew?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't know if you guys have one or not yet.
Keep up, Chris.
How does that work?
Doesn't. It's broken. It's cracked.
But how do you...
Someone
do you
spilled
burn
home-brewed coffee on it.
It was a popular scene. Some other friends had a similar fate where their Wii were cracked.
Oh, that's terrible to hear.
If this system had a pet, it would be an emu. Or emu.
Emu, yeah.
Emu. And then I would see the emu later.
Yeah.
Who are we hiding from? Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
I could listen to this literally forever.
It's a passion.
I'm serious as cancer when I say rhythm is a dancer. Brings us in. That is Snap with an exclamation point. And Snap Attack, the best of Snap, came out this week, which also has I've Snap Got the Power. We are in the middle of one. Heavy Rain, lots of snaps. I've Got the Power, Rhythm is a Dancer, which itself is from 1992.
Wow.
Like, that sound is so prevalent, like so.
It was the 80s dying.
It was like the 80s morphed into this weird, like, fashion and backbeat that defines, like, 1990 to 1992 music to me, which also informs a lot of Sega Genesis music from artists like Yuzo Koshiro or whatever. Like, they would really, like, when you play Streets of Rage, you can feel this club sound just saturating everything in this time frame. Brown, 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 brown.
You had a way.
Love it. Love it so much. But Snap Attack is out, as well as The Blood Divine, a British gothic metal band, Awaken.
Wow. I really thought I'd know more of the music during these periods.
This is one of the weird weeks where, like, last week we had two or three things in a row that we knew, but this particular week, the Snap Collection is the main thing. But, man, I love Rhythm as a Dancer.
What was the other hit? Because that one's insane.
I've Got the Power.
I've Got the Power. That was like one of my first favorite songs.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, Snap, I think... I swear that song was in the Mario Brothers movie trailer.
It's getting kind of heavy.
Yeah, Rhythm as a Dancer. Man, there's so many good songs in there. Anyway, news the same week, 1996, August 26th through September 1st. Prince Charles and Princess Di divorced after 15 years of marriage.
Aww. That was a big deal.
They seemed so happy.
That was a big deal.
They seemed so happy. It was. My mom was, like, devastated as a huge Anglophile.
Yeah.
Say she was divested?
No. Divested.
Sorry.
Yeah, Princess died in a car accident.
Oh, yeah.
That's next year.
Wow. She really didn't get to enjoy the single.
No, she didn't.
I don't think she got to see Spawn in the theater.
That's why Elton John wrote the song.
Yeah.
10,000. Didn't get to see Spawn.
An unsold ticket on the windows.
It's a horrible... John Leguizamo as a midget clown.
We'll have to remember all these jokes in literally a year. But also, August 26th through the 29th, the Democratic National Convention, and a clip that has taken the internet by storm is the DNC, everyone doing the Macarena, and Al Gore, like you were saying, can't pull it off.
The easiest dance in the world to do.
But watching all these old
you are watching
white
dance.
Elected people.
It's just every dad in the world.
Yeah.
And one of them is Hillary Clinton.
It's, Hillary looks...
There's a black guy with no rhythm. That's not fair.
I can only imagine Hillary consistently doing that balloon face.
She looks... I would make a joke of 20 years younger, but that's accurate. So that's not remarkable at all. Mm-hmm.
But she.
Meanwhile,
there's a certain amount of, I'm enjoying this, but I'm also putting up with this.
Yeah.
That she's got kind of a rictus grin. I'm clapping
like an intern
along.
Probably just like faxed her a diagram of how to do the Macarena. Like, really?
It's like she's having fun, but she's also laughing at everybody.
But like, this is on C-SPAN. Like, yeah, we've got this election in the bag. Like, just we're gonna just blow off some time with the Macarena.
I think they were probably overly confident that this would never see the light of day, let alone be brought up 20 years later.
In a year like this, the convention is a formality.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be reelected, and so he's going to be the nominee again, so why even bother?
Yeah,
let's just fucking dance.
40 minutes of the Macarena.
Yeah, let's go back live to the floor. Oh, we're still doing it. Which the Macarena we covered earlier, but is just if you weren't alive for '96 or not, you know, in post 5 years old, 6 years old, this song was
catnip for white people,
inescapable, and just set, like. Took over everything, and it was the constant butt of jokes. Yeah. And any live show that had to write jokes on a daily basis, probably a Macarena joke in there.
Every night.
Yeah.
I look forward to our episode exactly 4 years from now, where we find out how Al Gore fought against his Macarena from last time for the Democratic National Convention in 2000. Like, did he just, like, break dance? Like, I can dance. Watch me.
Watch me.
No, we know what he did in 2000.
The cabbage patch.
He fucking Frenched his wife in front of everybody.
Oh, wow.
It was so uncomfortable.
But come to think of it, what's the last dance craze? Oh, I guess the whip, the nene whip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so it's still happening.
Yeah, it's still happening.
Did you guys not see Hillary Clinton hit the dab?
Yeah.
God, that vine of this Bill Gates dabbing... with the Twin Peaks theme, and then it cuts to a pizza floating on just the ocean currents, like just waves crashing on a whole pizza on top of it. It's the saddest, weird, like, so this is how the world ends, right?
Yeah.
This is before, like, the world goes off the air.
Yeah.
This has to be the last thing
broadcast. And then we'll air that instead of
with a... Then a creepy Japanese girl climbs out of your computer and kills
her. Yeah, pretty much.
What else happened? Movies this week.
Yeah.
Moving on from that. If you can find that vine of the aforementioned, the Twin Peaks, just a whole pizza floating on the top of the ocean with that music in the background is the saddest, like, just devastating thing I never thought would destroy me. Anyway, let's get excited about the movie tonight in the theater.
This is hard to get excited about these movies.
Secret Service agent Sam Sims has a style all his own.
Sam's, what is that?
This is a black tie affair.
I know, sir, and I got it covered. I'm black. I'm wearing a tie.
But now, he's facing his most dangerous assignment. Protecting himself from the president's son.
It was Sinbad being hit with a hockey puck in
First Kid.
Mm-hmm. The clip bothers to call it a classic trailer.
Yeah. Sinbad plays a Secret Service agent tasked with guarding the... first son of the President of the United States of America. I have never seen this film.
Isn't the First Kid one of the Home Improvement kids? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
No, I don't think so.
I'm just
or
like,
maybe it's a Blank Check kid.
Yeah. I'm scrubbing through, and all of the ties in this movie are horrible.
Well, that's the thing. You can only describe them as very Sinbad-y.
Yeah.
Zuba pants.
But yeah, Sinbad,
I'm getting a Home Alone vibe off of this.
Mm-hmm.
It is like, how much damage can we do to Sinbad's groin, I'm going to guess. But if you need some kind of Sinbad Cliff Notes version, because I think this is, on first reference, it is prudent to give background information or not use an acronym if you were writing.
If you're watching a movie that has Sinbad and not Phil Hartman, run away. Run away. The House Guest and Jingle All the Way are all you need.
Yeah.
After that, boy, we are really in the dregs.
Hey, I like this in 1996. We'll see if it holds up.
The world is in grave danger.
International law has long kept you from acquiring them. I hope to help you overcome that.
And there's only one family who can save it.
I've uncovered the crime of the century.
They call them fearless.
All right.
No, keep going.
They call them dangerous.
Aha!
They call them... the Stupids.
You know you wanted that Mortal Kombat music in your Tom
say,
Arnold movie
Mortal,
trailer.
That's for Mortal Kombat.
You know you wanted it.
So this is... It's a spy comedy?
I have no idea. I've never seen it.
Another
Dave
Tom
will
Arnold.
Have to explain it. But yeah, the second Tom Arnold movie in 7 days.
Yeah.
My God.
I mean, I don't remember a whole lot about it, but it's just the entire family of idiots.
Yes.
Who I think probably stumble Maroons. Into a crime and have to help solve it or whatever.
But they're stupid.
But, I mean, it's got a good cast. Tom Arnold and Bug Hall. Alfalfa, come on.
What?
Christopher Lee. Alfalfa, remember from the Little Rascals movie?
No.
The only other thing he ever did of note is this movie.
Christopher Lee?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
But I
needed the money.
I just remember there's a scene where Tom Arnold is hiding behind a bush but doing a really poor job of it. I just thought that was so funny.
That's
15 years old.
Stupid.
Yeah, it is stupid.
It was stupid. It's based on a series of books written and illustrated by James Marshall. I'd never read those either. But what I did think was notable about it is the death rattle for Savoy Studios. Mm-hmm. The studio behind some of the weirdest high concept bombs of the 90s. Very short lived from like 91. White Man's Burden. Ray Liotta's No Escape, Prisoner Island movie.
Oh, that one's actually not bad.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, they're all high concept and crazy.
Yeah.
White Man's Burden is literally reverses the races.
Yeah.
Where John Travolta plays a black guy and Harry Belafonte plays the rich white guy. It's crazy.
Yep.
Serial Mom. Previously mentioned T3 movies such as Heaven's Prisoners, A Thin Line Between Love and Hate, and Adventures of Pinocchio.
Oh.
Yeah, like all of them, every single one of them, a barely memorable failure, but like so weird.
Yeah.
And very 90s, not worth revisiting.
Ah, Serial Mom.
Serial Mom is great.
Yeah, the premise of the movie is that Stanley Stupid, Tom Arnold, him and his family go on a road trip to return letters to sender, because they think return to sender is a person.
Jesus Christ.
And hijinks ensue.
I can't believe this is an adaptation. That actually blows my mind.
And the only other notable film out this week is might be the worst of all.
People once believed that when someone dies, a crow carries their soul to the land of the dead. But sometimes the crow can bring that soul back to put the wrong things right. I thought that Eric was the last. I never imagined there would be another.
I didn't remember very well, but I'm like, did they bring back Brandon Lee's The Crow character for The Crow City of Angels, the sequel from 1996. No, they mentioned he is not the same person.
Yeah.
They retired the whole character.
Oh.
I don't know. If we haven't talked about the death of Brandon Lee. Like,
so it should be called The Crow 2?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a new crow. It's a new story, but with the same situation. Somebody is brought back to life with the power of either a crow or Stone Temple Pilots music. I can't remember. But this is one of the few mainstream hits for... mainstream hits for Miramax, but not at what you'd think of as a Miramax film. Very big crowd pleaser with young people. I remember going to see The Crow, which was the only time I stopped watching Woodstock on Woodstock 95 on pay-per-view, 94 on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I missed the Chili Peppers because I went to go see The Crow. I'm a 90s boy. But yeah, the movies, I really don't like The Crow, the first movie.
It's okay.
This is even
decently
worse.
Made. And Crow City of Angels is awful.
Yep. And they all went straight to video after this one failed at the box office.
Yeah, it's based on a comic that I didn't really follow up until that point. And I think, strangely, if The Crow is known for anything and the
defining
Crow,
the look of Sting in the 90s?
Yes. Sting, WCW wrestler.
Gotcha, Diana.
Who, after being Surfer Sting, happy dude with neon 80s face paint on and blonde hair, got hurt. Got his feelings hurt by all his friends, and the NWO took over and disappeared. And when he came back, he was in a trench coat with white face paint. Yep. And, like, I think Scott Hall or somebody had mentioned, your makeup, you ought to do something like this crow thing.
It's very clearly The Crow.
And it is straight up The Crow, and that's why people would call him Crow Sting.
The story
he would actually have a crow with him sometimes.
Yeah,
so,
and he would
into it.
And he would look like that to literally last year.
Yeah. And just because we won't be able to mention it for a while, we did Laser Time, our sister show, did a whole episode, I think with you, Diana, where actors who died on set.
Yep.
And that happened to both Bruce and Brandon Lee is fucking tragic. And
Bruce Lee didn't die on set, but in the middle of a movie.
He collapsed on set, yeah.
In the middle of a movie. Brandon Lee literally got shot.
Just shot by the stunt guy. I forget the exact story. The stunt guys are fucking around with a gun, and something got in the casing of a blank. And a blank is just a bullet with the gunpowder, because it's just a tiny little cannon.
Yeah.
And a blank, at that point, I think they've changed it since, a blank was just a bullet with the gunpowder, but without the little bullet part, the cannonball that forced that thing that shoots you. But it was an explosion. And if anything gets in that tube, that becomes a bullet. Yeah. And that is what happened. Yep. And he was shot on set and died not quite instantly, but almost. And just the most promising film career from one of the most, I don't know, if you're a Bruce Lee fan, you were looking forward to seeing what Brandon Lee would do. And I think it's one of the first movies completed with the use of CG. They had to CG Brandon Lee throughout the film in order to finish it.
I feel like we almost had a karate movie renaissance in the mid-90s. I guess we kind of did with Jackie Chan, but it could have been bigger. You know, with the Mortal Kombat movies and Beverly Hills Ninja.
It sucks. I think he could have been a household name. Yeah. I really do. And it really sucks that he was cut down by a movie as shitty as the stupid fucking Crow. It may be shitty because he was killed and is on screen with only the power of magical CGI. But I love that's one of those stories if you ever hear about a movie having to insure itself. Their main actor died. So that all that insurance money you think you're never going to get, they did, which helped the budget. And they had a huge soundtrack around it. The Crow, everybody had the Crow soundtrack. That's where Stone Temple Pilots' Big Empty came from.
And the Crow City of Angels soundtrack is bizarre in that... So Spawn, I don't know why I keep bringing up Spawn, but we mentioned the Spawn soundtrack is interesting because a year from now, it takes two bands that don't have a lot in common and fuses them so you get weird mashups.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a bunch of older songs from Joy Division, KC Sunshine Band, Fleetwood Mac, and they're now done by White Zombie, Filter, Hole, Seven Mary Three, the Toadies, and the Deftones. And it's just what? It's just such a weird mashup of old stuff sung by hot new acts like White Zombie.
There is also a video game we have threatened to stream it. I hope we push it off the schedule.
I don't know why
terrible.
I even rented it, but I did when I was, in 15 or whatever. I watched maybe the first one, but not even all that much. And I rented this game just because I think I was starved for new PlayStation games, and it's the worst. It's there's really bad beat 'em ups on the PS1 because they tried to do polygonal characters instead of sprites, and it's just so slow, and it has Resident Evil cameras.
it looks awful.
It doesn't work at all. But by the way, Crow 2, Brandon Lee is replaced by Vincent Perez.
Yeah, I didn't know who that was.
Who would later be in Queen of the Damned.
Oh, no.
That starred Aaliyah before she died.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, he's the devil.
It came out after she died. Yeah.
And you know who played the Crow next, I think? I just want to see if anybody can remember this. Edward Furlong.
Oh, wow.
Long, slow descent for old T2 Eddie Furlong.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe he played the Crow at some point.
So he did eventually hit puberty.
Yes.
TV this week.
Big week for television.
Oh, wow.
Just like last week, we're getting the Upstart Network, CW, WB, not CW, UPN, WB, Fox.
Before they merged and became the CW.
Yeah, but all these channels are getting their stuff out before ABC and NBC, those old codgers, CBS. August 26th, Seventh Heaven premieres. I have a clip of the intro, which is just so, what a nice old family show is.
Heaven.
You want to just lower it? We can talk over the soothing tones.
I've never seen a single second of
the
show.
Well, I remember it because it introduced the world to Jessica Biel.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, as a 15-year-old, Jessica Biel's hot, and the middle sister I also had a thing for. But the show is also notable in that the dad, Stephen Collins, I believe is his name.
That guy is so lucky because the Bill Cosby news broke at the same time. A bigger star with an even larger skeletons in their closet. Yeah. This guy got to kind of skate by.
He even admitted to having inappropriate relationships with So he said in December 2014 in People magazine, he had inappropriate sexual conduct with three female minors in 1973, 1982, and 1994. So luckily the three underage girls on the show avoided his wrath by 2 years.
That we know of. And that came out in part of a divorce or something. Yeah. It was all so sloppy. I avoided the show like the plague because this looks... It's just the whitest thing ever.
I assume it's terrible.
It's just so goddamn white.
Well, I'm going to throw my little sister under the bus. She was the one who was watching this, and I'm like, okay, I'll look at that Jessica Biel. She looks nice.
Were Brett and I in the same boat that we didn't have WB or UPN in our little cities?
Yeah. So then you also missed out on the other show, or the show that premiered the next day, August 27th, Homeboys in Outer Space.
There we go. News coming sooner or later. Two good friends since the age of five. It's been their dream to run a starship as a team. But everything was going cool till a minor mishap in flight school. The body ship was very fun and now they're having fun.
And wait, look at me, hear the hook. There you go.
Starring
the intro is amazing. Starring no
starring
one.
Flex.
This was a national punchline, kind of, as these networks were trying to define
this
themselves.
The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer. Yep. That was like a one-two punch of like.
It was always Shasta McNasty.
There too. Yeah. But I never watched it, but just
poor
the
UPN, just trying to dump anything they could to see what. I mean, maybe this will work.
And like
maybe people like it.
It has no fans. No one is holding this aloft for any reason. Because I do see that James Doohan is in the show as one of the main cast.
Wow.
And like, I need to see this.
Scotty
from Star Trek.
Wow.
Please let me see that. And of course, you can't. Homeboys in Outer Space. And we did the second episode of Laser Time was about one of my favorite things. Story songs. When a premise to a TV show is so high concept, somebody has to sing you what's happening. And please go look up that intro on YouTube because it starts out with two little black kids in a wagon cruising through space. It is called the Space Hoopty.
Of course.
It's
great. You get a thorough explanation.
Flex plays Tiberius Ty Walker. I'm assuming that's a reference.
Yeah, James T. Kirk.
Yeah.
The very same day as Homeboys in Outer Space joined our world, we had the final episode of Rescue 911.
Oh, no.
Wow, I forgot all about that show.
Yeah, it was a show that I loved as a kid, though it also frightened the hell out of me. But it was part of the charm was that William Shatner would do narration for every single calamity that happened.
But what do you do if you're seriously injured in a place so remote, there's no way to make that emergency call? I'm William Shatner. Tonight, true stories of people whose lives are in danger and the men, women, and children who try to save them on Rescue 911.
Jesus. Now, Chris, I would think that there is a way you would always remember that this show existed because it's such a good joke on The Critic. About it was like Rescue 911. Tonight, it's only we're only dealing with calls involving James Caan.
Yes.
Caan!
Totally forgot about that. We do need to revisit The Critic so bad.
Yeah. Yes. Damn, Michael sent me here specifically to try to get Talking Critic happening.
I think that we
there's only
to
like
do it.
20. It's super easy.
I'll just say maybe on April Fool's Day. Maybe.
Every Rescue 911 had multiple segments where like they would do dramatizations, Man in Heaven, of like insane like people getting like their arm cut off or like falling off a cliff. But the names of the segments almost sound like they could be America's Funniest Home Video nominees. So the segments for the finale included Runaway School Bus, Kneeboarder Hits Tree, Toddler Falls from Tree, and Frozen Boy. I believe Frozen Boy was the very last segment on Rescue 911.
Frozen Boy, followed by Firefighter Nutshot.
And Baby goes like...
Baby loves head rub.
A very big week for TV.
Can we also say that like it's the last time ever you can put numbers 9/11 in your TV show?
Man. But other series premiering this week: Good Behavior. That's GOODE.
Ooh.
In the House, which had LL Cool J. All
right.
And Carlton eventually.
Yeah,
Malcolm and Eddie, which had Malcolm and Jamal Warner.
It was. I only know that because when the internet first started, I was obsessed with Mystery Science Theater 3000 and J. Elvis Weinstein, the original voice of Tom Servo. I read every interview conducted with the cast of MST3K, and he specifically referenced Malcolm and Eddie as being one of the most depressing times in his life.
Wow.
As in, everybody here is getting paid fine. There is not one person here who wants to be here or likes what they're doing. Not the stars, not the writers, not the directors, not the producers. Damn. Everybody's vaguely ashamed. And it went for four seasons.
Wow. And Sparks, which those were all UPN shows. Mm-hmm. On WB, premiering this week, The Jamie Foxx Show, which is kind of a continuation of his success from Saturday Night Live. Not Saturday Night Live.
Living Color. Because, like, if you were like me and didn't have WB, UPN...
I had them both.
Like, you did... Jamie Foxx's rocket to stardom seemed very drastic when it was... This show was very popular. Yeah, I think in major territories like New York and Chicago, this would beat Home Improvement in the number one shows in like major territories, but I literally never saw it because I didn't have the network.
And also out premiering on WB this week, Nick Fresno, Licensed Teacher.
Jesus Christ.
Just,
I just imagine it exactly. That's just a placeholder. We're going to have another show,
it's
right?
It's like the white version of this, the White Steve Harvey Show. we have a forum member named White Steve Harvey. But yeah, and actually also the guy who played Nick Fresno is now dead. So
yes.
You should know that. Last but not least, premiering on September 1st is Big Deal, Fox's take on Let's Make a Deal, which was hosted by the same guy who hosted Studs, Mark DiCarlo.
Oh, God.
And had Big Bad Voodoo Daddy as the house band.
Yeah.
It was canceled by mid-October.
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
God, wow. Jesus, that kind of threw me for a loop for a second.
What a week to be alive.
Oh, wow.
What a week to be getting into DVDs and not watching television.
Moving into games this week, games. Perhaps most notably the great intro of PS1 fighting game. It's raining, thunder, camera pans down, and a silly haired man is climbing out of a rock.
And we're about to see the Shibuya crossing.
The Shibuya, Shibuya intersection, which I think Jun Kazama is walking through.
Wow.
This may be my favorite game intro.
This is Tekken 2, is out 20 years old on PlayStation 1. This intro song is so is so goddamn good. And at a time when we just actually posted on Laser Time on our YouTube channel. We were watching the Tekken 1, 2, and 3 endings.
2 will be up by the time
this. Piano part.
Oh, yeah. Nina Williams. Thoughtful. She's tossing her hair out of her face. A ridiculous outfit on. Not practical for fighting at all. But then it hard cuts to post-apocalyptic. A robot of Jax is walking through with a bunch of guns.
Yeah. Oh, that's guitar. Whale.
So anyway. But this speaks to like why I think Tekken was so big in the mid-90s was... Not just 3D fighting games were becoming bigger and more popular. Like 2D fighting games, Street Fighter, Darkstalkers, Street Fighter Alpha, Mortal Kombat, those had kind of ruled the roost for years since 91 up till 96. But now the technology is getting to the point where these 3D fighting games look a little better, run a little cleaner. The character models are more detailed, and this one adds tiny little gameplay elements like being able to like counter like June. You can hit back in the two buttons, and she'll actually. Counter and parry a move, and you get chain throws. Like King is the wrestler, and instead of just pushing two buttons, grabbing someone and DDTing them, you could like do a move, this button combination, then he would like move and do another move, and then Nina could do a similar thing where she'd break one limb and break another. But on top of the fact that it was just a fun game to play that looked cool, Namco did such a good job of having these great CG intros at a time when the only CG movie that had really been out is the first Toy Story. Mm. And the intro to this game looks as good or better than Toy Story.
Well,
and like,
you should watch that shit again.
I've watched it a ton.
Because Toy Story 1...
It's still through like that MPEG-1 cheese grater filter, but like...
I mean, that's... But the quality of the renders...
It was astonishing.
It's very good.
And it's night and day compared to what, like one year earlier, where like you can watch it on our YouTube page.
Yep.
They look like fucking reboot characters. At best. And then the sequel is just, they all have individual endings, like 20 or so characters.
There's a lot of endings. And just, but again, like all these different endings, there's all this content that you need to make a mass audience care about a fighting game. And Street Fighter had endings for every character, and Mortal Kombat did. But up until this point, every character in a fighting game had like a static image with some text. Mm-hmm. It's a slideshow. And Tekken 1 had kind of ridiculous or almost non sequitur endings. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And 2 kept all that going, but just the quality of everything got so much better that you wanted to see these endings and get all these unlockable characters. I played thousands of rounds of
characters
of
I didn't like just because there's no online.
Why am I playing this Kunimitsu? Just because I want to see the ending.
Yeah, I just want to see the ridiculous ending. And Kunimitsu's ending is one of the worst.
Yeah.
But like I remember one week we played this every weekend,
yeah.
countless hours. And I remember one weekend specifically, we played 100 matches of just Bruce versus Bayek.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's even how you pronounce his name, I'm sure it is. But like, we just were like, what's two characters we've never played? These two. We're going to just play this forever. And we played literally, when we got to like 70 rounds of it, we're like, let's just go to 100. Just because we're 15 and have nothing better to do.
It's,
but
yeah.
so much Tekken 2 at the time. And it's 20 years old on PS1. And just that opening was great. The endings were fun. The music, the soundtrack. There was a VG Empire back in 2012, I think. My game music podcast called it Tekken Tunes.
Someone helped cut together a Talk Radar promo with that music for the whatever.
Yeah, the Tekken 2 intro. It remains one of the... It's like the shorthand for a lot of nerds is like when you're trying to... Like, hey, I went to Tokyo. I went to the
Shibuya,
and they're like, "Oh, Shibuya." They may not know Shibuya. They may not the Tekken 2 intersection. Oh, cool! Wow, that's really neat.
I mean, it's astonishing. I would say this might be my favorite PlayStation game, like that and Metal Gear Solid 1. But like the fact that, first of all, the first Tekken came out of kind of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great game. So Tekken 2 came with this insane amount of hype. Like, there's a new Tekken game coming.
Yeah.
And the fact that it, like, delivered on that is amazing.
For at least three games.
Yeah. And then Tekken 3 will come to PS1, I think, next year, 97? Yep. Maybe 98, I can't remember.
I do wonder if the nature of Tekken in general made it easier to make annual or iterative releases on. Because the models remain relatively the same.
So 1, 2, and 3 changed so much.
Did it?
I don't know how much repurposing they really would have got.
But it's harder. I just imagine it might. Is it easier than redrawing a Street Fighter sprite? I do not know.
Well, that was another thing that helped the Tekken games is rather than half steps of like, well, yeah, here's Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition. Like these are the same sprites. We fixed some bugs. We palette swapped
two new characters,
and well, not even that. Like you could play as the four characters we already made, who already have moves and inputs built in. So like, but this was no Tekken 2 is immediately whole new cast. The plot has actually moved forward at a time when Street Fighter was still... Street Fighter 3 still wasn't out. You were playing Alpha. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, what happens after 2? And we're all still kind of like wondering. And Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3 had already burned off. So it's like Tekken was right there ready to go. Street Fighter's kind of treading water. Mortal Kombat has done its thing. Mm-hmm. And Tekken is there to be the next big 3D... the next big fighting game. Anyway... also out this week, Elder Scrolls 2.
Daggerdale Fall?
Daggerfall. I can't remember which. I neglected to put the subtitle. But Elder Scrolls just showing you how far back before Morrowind, before Oblivion, before Skyrim was...
Or Bethesda? Or was that always their bread and butter?
I'm actually not sure who, where... Because, again, it's PC, so this is outside of my realm. But leading into...
we had a console RPG this week.
Yeah, it's a console RPG. Oh, much, boy. Much worse. This is pre Final Fantasy VII and
kind of the first
Bethesda.
It is Bethesda, for Elder Scrolls. Mm-hmm. Which again, if you're in the comments, if you're a listener and Elder Scrolls 2 was something you really latched onto, please type in the comments like what was cool about it, what stood out. Like
I didn't know it existed until Morrowind.
Yeah, Morrowind is the first time I ever heard of it, which because being a console gamer, which this is again, I think I mentioned earlier, 96 is about when I got Pentiumed out. Of the PC gaming. Like prior to this, I was all up in Wolfenstein, Warcraft 1 and 2, Doom 2, Ultimate Doom, Rise of the Triad, Duke Nukem.
Pentiumed out.
And then Pentium 3D acceleration, it's like, oh, I will never be able to do this.
I can't afford this.
I'm out. But anyway, PS1 launch this week, Beyond the Beyond.
This was
a PlayStation 1 RPG.
Kind of the first PlayStation.
And it was more or less the first, like, oh, I want to play a Final Fantasy-ish game, and there hasn't been one in for freaking ever.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, I'll play Beyond the Beyond. And as I mentioned in the last week's episode, this is part of my three-week con. I was straight up front about it. Here's my receipt. Electronics. No, it was Babbage's. Here's my receipt. Give me my full refund, because you still haven't changed your return policy That was at Babbage's, where I totally got all that shit for free. Mm-hmm. This was Electronics Boutique, who had not updated their thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, traded in Jumping Flash 2, which we talked about last episode, got Beyond the Beyond, played it for a week, and it wasn't great. Like, it was just kind of ugly and not super fun.
Had, like, a really terrible encounter rate.
Yeah.
Like, you'd walk, like, four steps, boom, new battle.
Tons of battles, and just was not grabbing you at all. And what broke the camel's back... Why is that the
Camelot's
why
back.
Is that the... Is it Camelot?
It is Camelot.
Jesus.
Go on to make all the Mario RPGs and Shining Force.
Like Mario Tennis and Golf and all that stuff.
Sorry, yes. Which are... The GBC ones are great RPGs.
Yeah.
Tennis and Golf.
Strangely
so amazing.
But the thing that made me go, I can't do this. So something I hate more than almost anything are slide puzzles.
Like Bioshocky pipes.
Like tiles.
Mm-hmm.
Bioshock I'm okay with because it's Pipe Dream.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm okay with. When it's, here's a picture.
That's awful.
Now slide these things around until it makes you, I already know what it is.
That's awful.
I can see what it is from now because I'm an adult.
Yeah. It's a 1960s game show.
I'm at a table at Denny's. Like,
yeah. So when it's like 4x4, I'm irritated. When it's 8x8, I'm like, oh, damn. Geez. And I swear this game had like a 16x16 slide puzzle.
Man.
And I walked in the room and was like, I'm not even trying. And turned it off and took it back. And I got the next game in the list, which was Die Hard Trilogy.
Can I just quickly share my Beyond story?
Oh, yeah, please.
So I went into this game with such high expectations. So I was a late bloomer with RPGs. The first one I ever played was Earthbound in 1995.
Wow.
And I loved it so much. And I was like, I got to find a new RPG. Oh, there's this game, Chrono Trigger.
Game's
great, too.
Man.
And then basically spend a couple months, like, I'm, like, reading all these video game magazines about all these cool RPGs coming to the PlayStation 1. They're finally coming. It took a year, but we're finally getting PlayStation 1 RPGs. This is the first one I play, and it's one of my biggest disappointments ever in gaming.
Turn you off of the genre for
a while? No, because after this was, we'll probably talk about it soon, Suikoden, Wild Arms.
Yeah, Wild Arms.
Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, Wild Arms is not far off. But yeah, it was just, I feel like this game had an unfair level of baggage to live up to, like, because the prior years it was Chrono Trigger, Earthbound, Final Fantasy III/6, like Mario RPG. There was so much. If you played these types of games, you were disappointed.
Yeah, but just the encounter rate, maybe Suikoden 4 is as bad, where it's like, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I walked so few steps that I forgot which direction I was going. Let me figure that out. Oh, I'm in another battle. Like, literally like a Ouroboros. I don't know where I'm going, I don't know where to go, and I don't have enough time to figure it out every single time.
It's just weird to me that Camelot developed so many, this is their Sony RPG exclusive.
Yeah.
They have Shining Force for Sega as a console exclusive, and Golden Sun as a Nintendo exclusive.
Oh, they know what
they've developed RPGs for every, other than Xbox, every
everything that we've said except this game is good.
Yeah. Hot Shots Golf, great.
Yeah. But so I traded that in and got Die Hard Trilogy, which this is such a great game of combining Die Hard 1, 2, and 3 as completely separate games in completely separate genres. Yep.
They could have all sold them separately, really.
Yeah.
They are a little one-note and weak. And the Die Hard 1 game is maybe the worst, where it's this crude third-person game where you run around and just shoot people.
It's what you think of when you think of generic PlayStation games.
Yeah, and it's pretty ugly, but at the time it was kind of whatever.
Yeah.
Die Hard 2 is a Virtua Cop, like an on-rails first-person. Mm-hmm. You're moving through the airport. The
like Area 51 mouse compatibility for the PlayStation.
Soundtrack to this game,
it's really good. We streamed it a couple months ago, and I remember like Brett and I just being like, I remember this song. Yeah. It's great.
This song is great. When I got my driver's license mere months after this, one of the first thing I drove to was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh.
Wheels. Look it up.
And then walk.
Then I drove to the Die Hard Trilogy soundtrack. But then the Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is only a year old for a movie. So this kind of comes out of nowhere.
I love that movie so much.
Yeah,
right,
I do too. I love With a Vengeance. It's a get in a car and drive as fast as you can to a bomb that's about to go off somewhere in this vaguely New York area.
It's so much
fun. It's just such a great arcade game that I would play it anytime. Mm-hmm. It is one of my favorite PlayStation games.
I wish I would have gotten the sound. It has the worst Samuel L. Jackson impersonator.
Oh, yeah. Back on the clean!
Bad idea!
I don't like to lose!
And when you're picking which movie you're playing, you just scroll through them and you'll hear John McClane repeat on himself 10 times over, Yippee-ki-yay!
You just keep selecting.
And bizarrely, and Diana, because I know you like the diehards, it spawned a weird ass sequel, a Die Hard Trilogy to Viva Las Vegas. So somewhere in the Die Hard canon, there's another.
Such a disappointment. Like they basically redid through the same three games, but made each of them worse. It's astonishing how that happened.
And that's all the while Sega took its Dynamite Cop series, brought it over here to arcades, and got the Die Hard license to call it Die Hard Arcade, and it's this horrible looking John McClane. I love that game though.
This might have the, when you're talking about clipping through the names,
I don't like to lose. Please let me drive.
That's Sam Jackson.
That's supposed to be Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Let me drive
Zeus.
It's a great,
I look Puerto Rican to you, motherfucker.
It's
in this game, when he's wearing the sign, it says, I hate Nintendo.
Hey. But the other notable thing is when you would drive up on the curb, because it's in New York and you're surrounded by these super crude people that look horrific.
Yeah, you just like pull up to next to them. They look like...
Like their neck is coming out of their shoulder and it's really weird.
They look like a bunch of flat Stanleys.
The textures are like warping and tearing constantly. Yeah. But you can plow through them. And if you're in first-person driving mode, it's basically your head is in the grill. And you smash through them in so much blood, and then the wipers come on and start, like, wiping all this goo off. But the game itself is so much fun, because it's one of those one-note, like, get there as fast as you can, find the fastest path, avoid all these other obstacles, and then if you don't, this bomb goes off and New York explodes.
Yeah.
It's so much
bombs
fun.
That you, the last boss is you attacking a helicopter by driving your car into bombs, propelling yourself in the air, and car-butting a helicopter. It's great.
I was going to take... That's it for 96. I was going to take us out with White Zombie covering I'm Your Boogeyman by Casey and the Sunshine Band. But I'd rather just play a Die Hard Trilogy song. So when we come back, what happened this week in 2006?
All the ships at sea, this is Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time, see if there's something worth a watching. 50 years ago this week, 31st of August, 1966, we have Blake Edwards' What Did You Do in the War, Daddy, which has its fans. I can't remember that I have seen all of it, I'll be perfectly honest. But it's got Dick Shawn in it, and Dick Shawn is always, always, always funny. Also, the Beatles played their very last live performance at Candlestick. August 29th, 1966. As you remember, just a couple weeks ago, Revolver came out. Go listen to Revolver. Anyway, 75 years ago this week, the Nazis laid siege to Leningrad. Where's America? They're probably wondering. Where are they? And we were like, screw you. We're watching Eleanor Powell musicals like Lady Be Good because, you know, war's for other people. Spoiler alert. The movie I'm going to recommend this week, though, is August 29, 1941, The Little Foxes, directed by William Wyler, starring Betty Davis. This is, you know, I had to rewatch this movie because I remembered all the awesome parts, but it is a slow burn movie. It's adapted from the Lillian Hellman play about these, like, rich siblings and how they're kind of screwing each other over. And there's very little plot and a lot of character until, like, two-thirds through the movie, all of a sudden... Betty Davis puts it into fifth gear and becomes the evil bitch Betty Davis that she always did so, so well. She does some very cold, cruel, fun things. So I ended up really enjoying Little Foxes. Also, I'll pimp out because this is almost... Actually, this is William Wyler's last movie that had nothing to do with World War II. He made Mrs. Miniver the next year, which is about a British home front during World War II. Then he went off overseas, and he made a documentary on the Memphis Belle and a bunch of other stuff. And I just read a book about that called Five Came Back, about Hollywood filmmakers going overseas during World War II, and I totally recommend it. So those are my recommendations for this week. Stay classic.
Iron Maiden.
Damn right it is.
Different World is 10 years old this week from their album A Matter of Life and Death.
They've never done all that much different, and it's still so awesome.
Yeah. I reached out to Patrick Kulikowski, who's knows, I don't know, anytime there's like a specific metal thing that I've heard him talk about before, I'm like, I need to ask. So he mentioned, and he specifically wanted to talk about this. Came out August 28th. It's the third album Maiden put out since singer Bruce Dickinson rejoined Iron Maiden. While not a concept album, the lyrical and thematic content talks a lot about war and religion. Apparently, the album wasn't mastered, so no additional effects like vocal harmonizing or compression, which gives it a more live sound than other albums. It's one of the band's heaviest albums, and the track Brighter Than a Thousand Suns is probably their heaviest track to date. The tour for this album was my first Maiden show. They played the album in its entirety and ended the show with only a few classics, which was kind of controversial for the time. It also suggests The Pilgrim, Reincarnation of Benjamin Brieg, and For the Greater Good of God as other songs in the album A Matter of Life and Death. Also out this week, though, Gwar, Beyond Hell, if you need it even more. And Kasabian, which I know the name. I don't know why I know that name. Kasabian. Did they have a big song recently?
I think they had. I watched the Serenity trailer over and over again, and they did the song in that. And basically, like every trailer in like 2005 to 2007 had a Kasabian song in it.
Huh. Mm. The album Empire was out this week. Moving right into movies for 2006.
Oh,
what
boy.
A trio of films.
Where to start?
All three of them great for wildly different reasons, but first up.
How to get burned?
I don't know!
This movie...
Fuck this
movie.
Movie
is so good.
Oh, boy.
I our old boss introduced me to the original Wicker Man.
Yeah,
and
it is
absolutely amazing. Yeah. The director just died. I forget his name. Shit. But Christopher Lee also recently died. But like, the beautiful story of Hammer Studios, a shitty, low-rent British company that was basically remaking Universal monster movies in the 70s. And The Wicker Man was like their first... This is an original concept. It's not a straight-up horror movie. Yeah. And it's really weird. And like
And it's a slow burn.
It's a slow burn.
It's slow creeping weirdness.
And it might star the least likable protagonist of all time.
Yeah.
He's a hardcore, angry Christian person who literally sees two people fucking and like runs up on them and makes a cross shape. No! Premarital sex! Totally unlikable. So I'm like, why? How do you remake this? And the Nicolas Cage version, he punches at least four women.
It's so good.
Well, how you do it is you get Neil LaBute. And Neil LaBute hates women.
Yeah, it's...
And now, at first I was like, the idea of it being a matriarchy, okay, that's interesting, because the original...
I have not seen this.
The original, you know, they're these like weird hippy-dippy, ancient Celtic sort of nature worshippers.
And a hardcore Christian, basically kicked off the force, goes searching for a missing girl, because he knows only he can solve the crime. He's the most unlikable hero ever.
He just runs around just judging and being mean.
Yeah, awful.
But you also feel like something is kind of weird here. It's not just that they're weird cult hippies. And Britt Eklund dance around naked and shit. It's just
love that sequence. Body
so
double,
good.
But she's beautiful.
Yep. And then this one, let's remake it and take anything looking like subtlety out of it. And just make it a matriarchy, which is like, okay. And then just it's one of those movies where it's like, and here's the big reveal at the end. It was all blah, blah, blah. And it's like, if you go back and think for 1 second, none of this movie makes sense at all.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And it's just weird that it became more famous for, like, it's one of the first YouTube montages before, like, copyright flags of, like, you have to see Nicolas Cage's overacting performances in this film.
So this is him walking from a... Like, this... So we watched this finally for one of our shitlords viewing nights, and I... This was so much fun. Because every scene is just, what? What?
It's Pete Cage for sure.
Yeah, and this is him like walking from across the room to a woman who's staring him down, and I don't remember if this is the woman he punches or if the woman he kicks.
Oh, it's the woman he punches.
So this is
Lily Sobieski is the one he flying kicks.
Yes, and he kicks her twice, and she flies up against the wall, and he kicks her again. He's so mean and such an asshole. But yeah, this is from across the room. How long this is taking.
She's just standing there.
And then famously...
Oh, no, not the beast! Not the beast! Ah! Oh, no, my eyes! My eyes!
It's almost unfair. That is a deleted scene, the bees, but it's so glorious.
Just every single scene has something in it that is stupid and makes no sense. But they are like, oh, Cage is giving it.
Yeah.
He really wants to try.
Stand there and frighten my children.
Sorry, I'm Edward Malus.
I love the original Wicker Man so much, and it's basically was it the launch of Christopher Lee being just like a worldwide recognized awesome person?
No, I mean Dracula, the horror movies.
Yeah, I just remember like
that was the Stupids a decade
there's
earlier.
There's an Anchor Bay DVD of the original one that shows like. He wanted people to see this movie so much. And, like, he wasn't a household name in America. So he literally did, like, every public access show he could in order to promote this film because it was, like, for Hammer Pictures, it was a big passion project. This is our first original big non-horror movie. We can branch out and be better. And it's great. I don't know. I love Christopher Lee
so
much.
There was a fight over the rights, or there was a fight over the ownership, and
they were because
Lee stepped up to get it released.
Lee was Lee was trying to make a second one. Like I think his whole life, and it was in various stages of production. While this one was, and this kind of ruined the chances of a follow up.
Yeah, well, there was eventually a follow up.
There was, yes,
with the same director and Christopher Lee sitting in a chair because he's very old. It's horrible.
Didn't he died at almost 100.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee is the best.
He was so cool, but oh my god, the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man.
Fuck Nick Cage.
I'm seriously racking my brain to think, is there a scene where I didn't end up laughing? Where he's on a boat and he sees a girl and then a truck hits the girl on the boat? Yep, that was great.
It's worth watching, but yeah, the original is an actual film.
I'm mad curious.
This one is like a collection of scenes. So the next movie in the list, I have only seen once, and it was also
transcendent.
Yes,
a exquisite movie experience.
My name is Chev Chelios, and today's the day that I die. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself.
I've been poisoned with some kind of Chinese synthetic. You got to do something for me, Doc.
They gave you the Beijing cocktail. It's cutting off your adrenaline. If you stop, you die.
So
thanks, Dwight Yoakam.
This is Crank, and Jason Statham.
Beautiful.
Basically,
a masterpiece.
So I think I might have hated Jason Statham if not for this movie. Yeah. No, I like the Transporter.
Transporter was good
too.
Which
was also
no, but like this was, but this like it's not even irony. Like made me appreciate him on a whole new level, and I'm sure we'll get into why.
But yeah, so
it's about a man who has to have an adrenaline rush
constantly
every 15 like 30 minutes or he dies.
Yeah,
it's
constant.
It's basically like Speed is about a bus that has to go 55 or above. This is about a human who has to basically do the same thing with his body
including like one of the most bizarre not quite rape scenes in both films. Like Jesus Christ,
is
like
this one or the sequel where he fucks her at the dog park?
I think the horse track. I think that might be
the sequel.
The second one.
This one
is just in front of a crowd of like 45 fucking people.
Yeah. In front of like a bus full of Chinese tourists.
Yeah, bends her over a newspaper box and as she's like, fighting him off.
He's like, no, stop. He's like, no, really? I gotta fuck right
Played
now.
By Amy Smart to, I wish it was in more
Gorgeous.
Stuff.
I just saw her in Marin. She's in Marin playing another very sexy person.
Yeah, the directors, I'm forgetting.
I got Mark Neveldine and Brian
and
Taylor.
Yeah, Neveldine and Taylor, who then would go to the Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
It sucks because like this movie, if you just, I hope DVDs are still around so you can see the behind the scenes. This was just them like, we're going to try and think of the craziest shit we can do and think of the best way to film it with prosumer cameras bought at Best Buy for $100. Yeah. We'll link 7 of them up around Jason Statham as the director rollerblades in front of him to get the shot. It's the perfect movie so that, you might be able to make a interesting looking movie. Yeah. I just watched Hardcore Henry and it takes some of the wind out of Crank's sails because that movie is all about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But it's 10 years later.
It is 10 years later. But
there's just so many weird stunts and it's not even about the stunts. It's the relentless barrage of visual information
and weirdness too. There's like there's a Godzilla sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
why not? Okay.
No, it's the second movie where like a stripper gets shot in her breast implants and they bleed all over the stage. Like
silicone comes.
It's
out
so
all
insane.
Yeah, it's like every scene is the most ridiculous moment of the movie until the next scene happens.
We are like, and then I think all of us were like, we'll watch anything these guys do.
Yeah.
And then they
yeah.
made Gamer and Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, two weirdly like not entertaining in ironically or sincerely.
I was so hopeful for Ghost Rider because the first Ghost Rider is so strange.
Yeah.
In sometimes in really good ways, sometimes mostly
there's a
bad
few
ways.
Moments in Spirit of Vengeance. I do love
and there's
it.
There's a couple times in Spirit of Vengeance where he starts the giant truck turns into like a Mack truck becomes like the Ghost Rider truck.
Or when they embrace Nick Cage mannerisms in the Ghost Rider form where he does make like the what? Yeah. Like it's so cool, but other than that movie's terrible.
It's not good. Gamer is half a good movie. Like any anytime they're doing that Second Life stuff,
yeah,
that is kind of what Crank is, where it's just like, high score, now go fuck something.
I just want these guys to make movies forever. And
I know,
literally,
Michael's pointed out, this is a video game as a movie.
Yeah. 50% of the product is awful. Yeah. Did they do Jonah Hex? I will kill myself. God damn it.
And Crank ends with him falling out of an airplane with no parachute.
Yeah.
And Crank 2 opens with him hitting the ground. Not dying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love the gag. It has to be in the sequel then, where he's like, because he's calling his girlfriend and talking to her while he's just plummeting slowly to Earth.
Yeah.
And then, I think like the opening of the second one, he's like, you didn't get my message?
Yeah.
And it's just her playing the message. It's just...
Yeah, it's just a bunch of noise.
That's great. I forgot about that.
But I a billion percent would recommend Crank.
I totally recommend it.
And
love it.
After that is yet another
this,
film.
But this gets weird. I guess we can play the intro real quick.
As the 21st century began, human evolution was at a turning point. Natural selection, the process by which the strongest, the smartest, the fastest reproduced in greater numbers than the rest, a process which had once favored the noblest traits of man, now began to favor different traits. Most science fiction of the day predicted a future that was more civilized and more intelligent. But as time went on, things seemed to be heading in the opposite direction, a dumbing down. How did this happen? Evolution does not necessarily reward intelligence. With no natural predators to thin the herd, it began to simply reward those who reproduced the most and left the intelligent to become an endangered species.
I have weird feelings about this movie because I watched it again just for this. I love it.
Yeah.
But I hate its premise. I hate its holier-than-thou, like, smug-ass, like, oh, the smart people are going to be gone. We're the smart ones because we're noticing this. And this, it says something shitty about class because there's, like, this giant sequence of poor-ass white people who keep breeding too much. But it is one of the most high-concept comedies, and, like, it is funny throughout, though. It is really funny, especially because that guy comes in to narrate several times. Okay, sorry. Luke Wilson stars as Joe, the most mild-mannered human in history, who gets almost involuntarily thrown into a government project that freezes him. He ends up waking up in the year, like, 25-something or other. Mm-hmm. And the whole world, because of this evolution they've just described, everybody is made up of highly stupid people, and he's now the smartest man in the world.
In an idiocracy.
In an idiocracy. Oh, we didn't say the title yet.
No, you didn't.
just play that next clip real quick, because this is him waking up. Love the narrative.
Unaware of what year it was, Joe wandered the streets desperate for help. But the English language had deteriorated into a hybrid of hillbilly, valley girl, inner city slang, and various grunts. Joe was able to understand them, but when he spoke in an ordinary voice, he sounded pompous and faggy to them.
the movie's really... And I don't know where you got the release date from for this film, because... This is me being a big, giant movie fan and the internet sort of just getting started. And the movie was shot in 2004. And this is, like, again, I hate critics so much sometimes. Office Space is a fantastic movie. Yeah. Everybody knows that now. This is written and directed by Mike Judge, creator of Beavis and Butthead, currently working on a fucking fantastic show, Silicon Valley,
and
by the way.
King of the Hill in
between. And King of the Hill, yeah. And, like, just hasn't really done anything bad ever.
Yeah.
And
the Extract? Extract was just
I liked Extract. Yeah. I thought it was a response to, like, a grown-up response to Office Space. But Office Space bombed, was panned by critics, slowly found its way, and Fox was finally like, let's give you another shot at making a movie. You can just kind of do whatever you want. So it starts filming in 2004. And doesn't get a theatrical release like three times, and the release date is constantly pushed back. And I do think it went to theaters once.
Mm-hmm.
Critics never saw it. There was one trailer. Everybody, like, on the internet, like, what the fuck happened to this movie? It's missed three release dates, and so it's gone now. But it created this legend of, like, yeah, Starbucks is in the movie and Fuddruckers is made fun of, so they lobbied to shut the movie down, and Fox is in corporate back pocket, because there are, like, a lot of, like, real brands really made fun of, like, hardcore.
Yeah, there's, like, a giant Costco, and then the big thing from it is Brondo.
I have a drink of, for some reason, but the movie didn't, a consumer wasn't able to see this movie till 2007. It took about 3 or 4 years to finally become
visible. I saw it in 07 on TV.
Yeah.
Like it took me a minute to realize what it was, mm-hmm. and then like halfway through, I'm like, "Oh, this is that movie that I heard off and on about. That's the new Office Space."
It had become legendary because there would be like one screening a year where like just a single audience of people would see it and like write into Ain't It Cool News, like it still exists and like it does have all this stuff that people are rumors in it.
But like part of the other thing is not only did everyone get this breeding thing like push out the smart ones, but it's also like as that happened, a lot of corporate. Crap like gets in the way. So like the parent company of Brondo buys all the government agencies that should regulate food.
Yeah.
We start irrigating crops with Brondo instead of water.
That's what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
This movie is so great.
And Terry Crews.
It's my introduction to Terry Crews. I never knew who he was.
Yeah.
And I have a clip of him as President Camacho, and I believe he resurrected the character recently for a Funny of Die series to make fun of Donald Trump because it's eerily similar.
His full name President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho.
And I love his cabinet is all people with like fucking futuristic vests and long sleeve t-shirt with the name of what they are, like Secretary of State, written in like 2000 fucking energy drink font on all of their sleeves.
I know she's barren with all that starving bullshit and the dust storms. Are we running out of french fries and burrito coverings?
Yeah.
I got a 3-point plan to fix everything. And that ain't all. I give you my word.
This is the president.
He's gonna fix the dust storms too. And I give you my word. He's gonna fix the economy.
President Camacho stood before the world and promised everyone that Joe would solve all their problems. He would not only end the Dust Bowl and heal the economy, but he would cure acne and car sickness as well. And if he didn't, President Camacho made another promise. He would kick Joe's smart balls all the way up to the roof of his smart mouth, and then he would throw his brainy ass back in jail.
Love this narrator. He's there the whole time.
There's one other clip.
At the time, I think the show Punk'd had started. And it was funny. Of course, you want to watch it. It's pranking celebrities. It was really cool. And one of the cast members is Dax Shepard. And he leaves the show in the first season. I'm like, fuck this pretty boy idiot. Like, this is might be one of my favorite characters, comedic characters ever. I love him so much. This is just a quick clip. Because when Joe Joe is locked in a coffin. The military experiment is forgotten about. For funny reasons, I totally forgot about that the military guy becomes obsessed with pimping and his program is shut down. Yeah, the movie's fucking fantastic. So he ends up falling down a giant Wally-style trash pile and through his apartment. And it's Dax Shepard as this dumb lawyer sitting on a recliner with a toilet seat in it and a feeding tube. And I just love this line. Mike Judge makes an appearance.
The Masturbation Network, keeping America baiting for 300 years. And now, Sweet Bang Tube.
Oh, yeah, give me some. Cut me a piece. Oh, you... That's... Go away, baiting!
it's my favorite line. You like money? We should hang out.
That's like the number one thing I end up quoting from this is, I like money.
The Starbucks is a strip club. I love that it shows the progression of time by being next to a Fuddruckers, which slowly becomes Buttfuckers until like it's just called Buttfuckers and no one can remember the original title.
The number one show is Ouch My Balls.
Ouch My Balls.
Yeah.
Number one movie is Ass.
Ass. It's just an ass shifting. Yes, ass. This movie is great, and I don't know where you can find it. I don't know. I just hate this. Why does this get to get lost at time?
I just want to imagine that weekend in 2006, and I have the choice of seeing in the theater Crank, Idiocracy, or Wicker Man.
Yeah.
Man, what a full weekend. But moving out of movies, into TV.
Well, this is awards week. August 27th, the Emmys were hosted by Conan O'Brien, and this being 2006, they, of course, have an opening skit, and it's Conan visiting a very 2006 TV show.
Hey, wait. I found something. It's a hatch.
Dude, you don't want to go down there.
I've got to get to the Emmys. You want to come with me?
Well, we weren't exactly invited.
Really? But you won last year.
Nothing makes sense anymore.
Yeah. I love Conan, hate Lost.
It's a very... so I'll give you guys a quiz like last week. Mm-hmm. Chris, I'll ask you, what do you think won Best Comedy?
Best Comedy that year? Will and Grace off the air?
I believe it was...
I'm not sure.
This is clearly didn't win. For Best Comedy in 06.
We've talked about it on this show.
It's not Arrested Development.
It was in the first episode of the show.
News Radio. Nope.
God.
No, I don't know.
It was The Office.
Oh, okay.
What do you think won Best Drama? You're probably not going to get it because it is not dramatic at all. Well, that's a clue.
Shoot.
I think I can guess.
There's a lot of shooting on it.
Oh, I almost want to say 24.
Yep.
It was?
Yep.
Wow.
So, I was thinking this is too late for the good seasons of 24.
No,
but
it was.
Wrong.
This was season 5, which is not a good season of 24. I can tell you that much. It's the season where they brought back the guy that was very clearly stabbed with a syringe and killed.
Most of the episodes of 24 aren't good.
But anyway, so other big awards from that night. Tony Shalhoub won Best Actor in a Comedy for Monk.
Yeah.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus won Best Actress in a Comedy for
New Adventures of Old Christine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Kiefer Sutherland won Best Actor in a Drama. Again, it's
for
not really dramatic.
Shouting in 24, okay.
Put the gun down! And Mariska Hargitay won Best Actress in a Drama for some cop show.
Law and Order SVU. I actually remember flipping the dial and catching it just as she won, and she mentioned that it was, I'm guessing it was this year, that it was like the anniversary of her mom winning Best New Star at the Golden Globes.
Wow.
Or no, that must have been the Golden Globes, obviously, because back when they had a Best New Star. and her dad, Mickey Hargitay, was there with her. Stuff.
So Hollywood royalty wins again.
Yeah.
Later in the week, August 31st, the MTV Video Music Awards hosted by Jack Black. It's a big year for him in hosting stuff. He was also at Nickelodeon.
Kids' Choice Awards.
Video of the year was Panic at the Disco for I Write Sins, Not Tragedy.
I guess I had officially checked out of all this at this point.
But Brett, we got there. This was the final year that they had video game related awards. best soundtrack was
what?
Or best sorry best composition was Elder Scrolls IV: Oblivion.
We just talked about Elder Scrolls too.
Yeah, which beat out Dreamfall, Electroplankton, Hitman, Blood Money, and Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter.
I could
Electroplankton, really?
I'm not even gonna interject.
That game's about music.
I'm not gonna start.
And then best video game soundtrack, best licensed soundtrack. Mark Echo's Getting Up, Contents Under Pressure, which beats Burnout Revenge, Driver Parallel Lines, Fight Night Round 3, and NBA 2K6.
Just a fucking mix CD.
Yeah, the idea of like best licensed soundtrack, like so I can just just the songs you're able to pay for. Like what the fuck?
It's gonna be Crazy Taxi every year.
Yeah. Well, that's how Suicide Squad's gonna win best soundtrack this year.
Yeah, but Echo's Getting Up does have Helicopter by Block Party, which is pretty great.
And this is also the only year that the Video Music Awards awarded Best Ringtone.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Which I have to assume was given to Crazy Frog.
Yeah,
that was big. But that remember how big that. That was there were commercials for ringtones.
Ringtone.
The Axel Foley one?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Nokia.
That was runner up.
It's rubbish.
Jesus.
And August 27th, the final episode of Deadwood airs. I don't know enough about that show, but
It's tragic. I watched the first two seasons like in one like ravenous shot and I really loved it and it's amazing and the HBO is rough on some of its programming. Mm. It's like since it's not dependent on ratings or commercials, it's dependent on word of mouth. And it's like people talked about Deadwood and Rome, and then there was nothing else to talk about, and the ratings weren't there. But everybody liked the show. It did well critically, so they said, Deadwood, we're going to end you, and we're going to give you 4 more TV movies to complete your story. And that is every year, they're like, it's not off the table. Every year, Mills like it might happen.
It's so tough because I only just binged this in the last year, and it's so goddamn good.
I really want to see the third season.
It's such a pain that the third season, you feel like there's a lot of not much happening, and there's a lot of setting up things that will eventually pay off next season, and it never do. Like Brian Cox shows up and actors and stuff, and you're like, ooh, where are they going with this? They're going nowhere.
One of my favorite unsung actors, Garrett Dillahunt, plays 3 different characters in all 3 seasons. He's on, that's amazing. Doesn't he shoot Wild Bill in the beginning? Comes back as a Pinkerton?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Deadwood's great. Such a good show.
Games this week, like I mentioned last week, we are starting to get into a barrage of games every week as we get closer to September, October, November for the holiday season. But Star Fox Command is kind of the main one that I would mention at this point.
It's
which
the last
is
good Star Fox game.
Yeah, it was a Star Fox game. We actually just did a VG Empire about Star Fox 1, 2, and 64. Mm-hmm. But Command is one that's the closest to, like, I want to play a good new Star Fox game. And that's the last time I felt like that itch was scratched.
Mm-hmm.
You had linear levels. You had all range levels. You could fly around the ship.
It's just unbelievably well optimized for portable play.
Yeah, and it has in between.
Small missions.
You have, yeah, small missions, and you also have a screen that you actually draw on. You can trace your, I want to take this flight path, and if you intersect with the enemies, you have a little dogfight.
There's a fog of war.
Yeah, and it works well, and it's out on Wii U inexplicably. putting the DS games on Wii, mm-hmm. Wii U instead of just putting them on the 3DS, but whatever. But I liked it. I reviewed it back then 10 years ago. I don't remember what I gave it. I remember enjoying it and finishing it and feeling like
I hit a wall with it, but I had a great time for a while.
Yeah, I left with a fuzzy, nice feeling about it. Also about Disgaea 2, which is...
Did play that.
I played a lot of this for the summer because I was big into Disgaea.
So I was going to say, who's got a sequel? Disgaea.
Man, how did that never happen?
Who's got a sequel and an underage girl? Disgaea.
Hey, that girl is 10,000 years old. All right. I don't care if she's in the body of
that
a 10-year-old.
That ass ain't it. Etna, baby.
Yeah, so Etna was actually one of the first... So actually, this is probably around when I actually made really good friends with a lot of people at NIS. Like, mm-hmm. their promotional team, their PR folks, and just... Like, NIS at the time was, you know, they'd put out only a handful of games a year, but because I liked most of them, they were really helpful and would, like, send you a lot of information about the game or hook up for interviews and just, like, help out. And Disgaea 2 I played a lot of, and it's
probably the densest RPG
ever. It is a strategy
played.
Game, kind of like if you was shorthand, you could say, like, Final Fantasy Tactics. Mm-hmm. But every item, you can dive into items, and the items have levels in them.
You get a sword, and then you can play like 90 levels inside the sword to give it more powers to play in levels that look almost exactly the same outside of the sword.
So it's one of these games, like, if you want to spend 1,000 hours on it, you probably can.
My friend who let me borrow it, he put over 100 into this. I did not finish it.
Yeah, and I played it for dozens of hours and was like, man, like, the characters are really fun. The art design is fun. The dialogue and interactions and the localization, it's all very cute and fun. But this is right when it became a thing. And Disgaea would go on. They're still making them now. It became a manga. There's toys. There's models. There's statues. There's all kinds of
look
crap.
Exactly the same. Same as the first.
Yeah. Bomberman Act Zero.
Holy shit.
The famous and poster child for gritty, awful reboots, taking the fun, silly Bomberman
games. Surely, Diana, you've seen Bomberman.
Yeah. Oh, I know Bomberman.
And so, like, this cute little guy with a little antenna on his head and no mouth, and then they make him up into an extreme exosuit, grungy hardcore.
He looks like Master Chief or
what?
Something. Has a huge giant
what
hand.
What the hell?
And it's not just like a bad reimagining; it's also a bad game. It's on top of that. Just
looking at this picture, and it's like a roided out Iron Man.
Yeah.
For one of the cutest, most iconic game characters,
God.
I think we have.
Is the title in, like, inferring that this is the prequel and that becomes cute?
Well, no, this is the beginning of a new era, man.
It's extreme.
So this bombs hard, no pun intended. Also, I was
one of those things that I think Hudson was dead not long after this.
And then after that was Enchanted Arms, which was an RPG early in the PS3 era. I vaguely recall this getting kind of like mid-range reviews. I didn't play it. It's from Software, who would do a lot more popular stuff later on. You'll know them most from Armored Core and Souls games and Bloodborne. Saints Row, the original Saints Row, launched 10 years ago, which itself warrants a larger discussion as the answer to GTA, that it beat GTA 4 by a large portion. Like, GTA 4 is like 08,
I think it's
still a ways away. So if you wanted that next gen, like, sandboxy game where getting different cars and going weird missions, Saints Row was the game. But this is before it became the super crazy, super ridiculous Saints Row.
The weirdest thing in this
not enough
one,
dildos this,
this
time,
one
huh?
did have the shoot poop on houses and stuff, like
next
great
time,
property damage, but that's about as wild as it got. Like, it was very kind of just normal.
Trying to be GTA.
Just want to point out, next time you see Patrick, let him know that he is one of 9 citations on Wikipedia for Bomberman X-Zero.
Nice.
One of our friends.
Yeah. But yeah, the original Saints Row, like, I remember playing it for like an hour or two and just not really getting totally into it. But it would then explode into a much bigger series. And now, to this day, it's no GTA because nothing is, but it wisely diverged from just trying to be another
GTA. I honestly feel GTA became more serious as a response to Saints Row existing, because you can't have two of those.
Yeah, they really dropped a lot of the San Andreas goofiness, and 4 was pretty straightforward, and I never played 5, but...
4 is amazing.
I love 4.
5 is great.
5 is great.
Yeah. Also, Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins on PSP, which was a polygonal Ghosts and Goblins, Ghosts and Ghosts games. Really fun, but very difficult, as is the type for that game. And then, deep breath, Xenosaga 3.
Jesus.
Also, Sprock Zaroth.
Also, Sprach Zarathustra. So
that's the one. From
Japan is still very relevant to gaming.
From Nietzsche. From Monolith Soft.
Thus spake Zarathustra.
Yes. So Xenosaga was the... Jesus, I don't know where to start with this. So Monolith Soft, who I think then goes on to do like Xenoblade and Xenoblade Chronicles X and all that, was making this huge... expansive, and I mean that as expansive and as a slang on expensive, RPG space opera series that was going to be 6 games, and they announced all this up front, and it's going to be, we're going to have all this philosophical, like, base that we're going to then extrapolate a lot of Nietzsche and all this other philosophy, like the classics, and we're going to, like, then spread it out into all the girl robots. And you're like, And then after the first one, they're like, I don't know, man. And after the second one, there will now only be 3 of these instead of 6. And
they did a show, though.
And like the first and third one are like huge cutscenes. Like, they became like a point you would go, like, this cutscene is too long. I can't pause the game. I can't do anything. I have to just sit and deal with this. Like, what if literally anything happens in my life? Like, but yeah, there's lots of Nietzsche references, which is funny because of how anti-pop culture he was. So I love the idea. I posit this as proof that ghosts don't exist, because as someone, if he could come back and haunt anyone, it would be the team that made this game. How dare you invoke my name? Anyway.
You know what's fun is you always think about ghosts being able to communicate with us, but I mean... Nietzsche just appears to these people and starts yelling in German, and they're like, who are you? What do you want? Ich keine Backup.
Does anyone in this office speak German?
So he's just floating there like, sprechen Sie Deutsch? Nein?
Surely someone in Japan does.
And he's like, gotta go find another ghost that can translate for him.
This is a real quick aside. I like that a lot.
But that's the end of the show. But each of those games, like, man, Xenosaga, I never played them. So, like, I don't have any frame of reference. There was Xenogears before that I'm a little bit more familiar with. But Xenosaga, I just never bounced into. And by the time the third one came out, this is PS2 still, and the PS3 is barely a month away. So it was hard to even... And Final Fantasy XII is right on
this
its heels.
Is the one with Cosmos or Cosmos.
Who's, again, like the... I don't know if she's an android or a cyborg or what, but just, like... And the character designs, I feel, changed, where they were super cute at first, and then they got really human proportions instead of, like, kind of silly.
Cosmos did
But that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for listening.
I did say that Monolith Soft is participating in development on Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, they're working on that. Yeah. Yeah, after their tightness with Xenoblade Chronicles X.
I loved what I played of the DS one.
Yeah, they're cool games with great soundtracks, but they're just a little too big.
Old-timey.
I liked the Wii one. The Wii U one, I was like, this is too much up front, and had I the time, I might put that into this, but I just couldn't get it to. The Wii one I liked, Xenoblade Chronicles, was good. Anyway, 302010 on iTunes. Facebook is Laser Time.
Yes.
Laser Time Show on Twitter.
Wondery.com.
Wondery.com/the words 302010. You can go to all that. And we also have stuff going up on Laser Time, the flagship show.
If you like a show like this with specific topics, then Laser Time is the show for you. I swear, if you like this, you will like a few episodes of Laser Time. Not many. not many. Do you have a favorite episode, Diana? Maybe you can help me plug it a little better.
Oh, God. My favorite of all time is still Bad Beatles covers.
Bad Beatles covers. A show all about finding the Bad Beatles covers. But Dan Amrick, thank you for that, buddy.
But anytime there's a countdown to the best or worst of something based on Rotten Tomatoes, you know, like... TV shows that were animated, they were made into live-action movies. Those were pretty bad.
This is a saga that has another part coming soon. Yeah, wow.
But you can also go to patreon.com/lasertime.
True.
We have a bunch of exclusive great content there. We have a weekly bonus show, bonus time, where we talk about what we're into in 2016.
Usually, yes.
As well as very frequent movie commentaries that we archive there, and the Patreon exclusive cheap podcast, pro wrestling podcast, where we talk about every month the goings on in wrestling. And hopefully you have a wrestler in the birthday segment.
There's also a Patreon exclusive commentary of the final deletion, which if you haven't seen, I didn't know wrestling had its own room. The room,
it's pretty good.
It's astonishing.
Yeah, it's something else. It's
really good. Okay, and if you like the video game talk, there's also Video Game Apocalypse, hosted by my hubby Mike Warparis.
Yes.
And if you want to talk classic movies and shit, I'm on Twitter now at ListenAnerd.
And Talking Simpsons, by the way.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Laser Time's a weekly.
Talking Simpsons has been on fire.
Yeah, it's. I believe we're probably in the fourth season at this point. Love that show. Love The Simpsons. Man, what a great excuse to rewatch old Simpsons episodes.
And to close out the show.
Oh, birthday is.
As always.
Smalls?
Yes.
The birthday song.
Yes.
Birthdays this week. Where did Macaulay Culkin and Chris Pine. Are both 36.
What?
Whoa.
They're the same age.
They're the same age.
Exact same age.
Holy shit.
Which blew my mind.
Wow. That's crazy. That feels insane.
Yeah, that feels
that
wrong.
Feel right.
John Mulaney.
Hey.
Aaron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Rubens. Mace.
Mace.
Jack Black. Shania Twain. Leanne Rimes. Daniel Stern. Jack Kirby. Michael Jackson. Would have. Richard.
Man, that would have been a huge party on the Home Alone set. Michael Jackson, Macaulay Culkin, and Daniel Stern with big old birthday cakes.
Richard Attenborough,
hey.
Cameron Diaz, Lewis Black, Jeff Hardy, part of the final deletion. Was he the one that deleted or did the
He got deleted.
He is deleted. Chris Tucker, Richard Gere, Dr. Phil, and Conway Twitty all had birthdays. And now the quiz... Born in 1939.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
let's see. I had to scroll back. Was on tons of TV throughout this time.
Mm-hmm.
But again, 1939. Was in a pretty good episode of The X-Files. Lots of TV in between there. Was in I Heart Huckabees. Is in a Netflix series right now. Or at least it's on Netflix still.
Hasn't been deleted.
Famously in 9 to 5.
Dabney Coleman?
Yeah.
Yes!
He's not dead?
No, he's very much alive. He was on...
Wait, no.
Not Dabney Coleman.
No. What's her name? I don't write the name, so I won't tell you guys.
Damn it.
In the...
It's a woman?
Man, I stumped myself with this.
Because
what a disaster.
I can't type the name, and I can't edit around it because the damn song's playing in the background. Don't worry, I'll find her name.
It's a
Jane Fonda. Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin. God,
she's born in 1939?
Wow.
What the fuck? I thought she was way younger than that.
Nope.
That means she was like the most famous in her mid-40s?
She's, 39, 76 years old.
Wow. Frankie and Gracie, I believe, is in that next book series you're speaking of.
So that was a little inside baseball on how I don't type the name in the doc so that no one can see, so they don't know the quiz. But then if I forget in the meantime...
I would like to recommend a great stoner watch for Lily Tomlin's The Incredible Shrinking Woman. One of the coolest 1970s effects films. It is hysterical. Really fun.
Anyway. Thanks for listening. We're going to let out that Tekken intro because I don't care. We'll see you next week with more of what happened in 30, 20, 10 years ago.